listening to the Fantasy Movie League podcast, the free fantasy game for Hollywood. Pick 8 movies for your own fantasy cineplex each week, earn points from real weekend box office results. Compete for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com. This is Wednesday, February 10th, 2016, and it's week 11 of the Fantasy Movie League award season. I'm Pete Johnson, the Fantasy Movie League nerd, and I'm here as always with Patrick Reardon, the box office guy. And Patrick, Super Bowl weekend was unkind to both Pride and Prejudice and Zombies and The Choice.
Well, not that either one of them were going to be like super strong options, but the Super Bowl definitely didn't like help matters there.
Well, so let's go to the predictions on those. So the professional forecasts had Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, both ProBoxOffice.com and ShowBuzz Daily had that one at 11 million, but it ended up coming in less than 5.5, so less than half that. Now, The Choice didn't do quite as badly. It was predicted to do about 7.5 by those two services, and it ended up coming in at 6.
Like, maybe the trend of Zombies and Nicholas Sparks is finally fading after, like, God knows how many years.
Well, we talked about that last week, that the lowest Nicholas Sparks opening prior to The Choice was at something like 10 million.
I think it was exactly at 10 million.
And we talked about, were those novels, like, had they reached an exhaustion point where you can't make any more of them? I sort of made some comparisons to, say, Grisham novels. I was really into reading Grisham and Crichton in the 90s, and it seemed like after you made about 4 or 5 of those, you kind of started to reach a point where the quality of the source material wasn't good enough to sort of bring in a big star or bring in the bigger marketing, and it seems like we're there with Nicholas Sparks now.
Eventually, you start getting, by their standards, kind of the bottom-of-the-barrel titles, and you run out of, like, the ones that make for the best movies, and eventually you're going to hit a wall. It looks like the Nicholas Sparks trend may have hit that this past weekend.
May have. Now, your Hail Caesar didn't do as well as expected, but it was pretty close.
Last week I thought it was going to be, everything was going to battle for that 10 to 13 range, and Hail Caesar was the only one that ended up there, but was way too expensive of a fantasy play, so I stayed away from all three of them.
Now, did you happen to play our best performer, which was Kung Fu Panda 3?
I did not. I just ended up saying, like, I'm just going to go with my boring Star Wars Big Short. I gained no ground, but I also didn't lose any.
Yeah, it seemed like that happened to a lot of people this week. So only 21 people found The Perfect Cinema, which was Kung Fu Panda, 6 Times the Boy, and Daddy's Home for your 8 screens. And it seemed like a lot of people played a combination that was Kung Fu Panda at the high end and Daddy's Home as a low filler, and there was lots of different plays for those other 6 screens in the middle. I was the same way. I played, what did I play again? I played The Finest Hours in that middle. And yeah, I gained like 2 spots, but stayed pretty even with the pack.
I mean, hats off to the people who had the guts to go for like 6 screens of The Boy. Like, yeah, that really clearly paid off.
Yeah, it absolutely did. Now, let me give our regular recap here of some award winners. So we have a really cool name here for one of our drawing winners now. So we've got 3 new drawing winners to announce on the podcast that have been on the website here for about a week. But one for week 8 is You're Killing Me, Smalls.
It has a very stylish t-shirt to be wearing from Fantasy Movie League.
Indeed. So week 9 winner is Amy Cineplex. And week 10 winner, I'm not exactly sure how to say that. It's kind of 3 words together. One of which I'm not sure I can say in our podcast, but somebody who's definitely an Alabama fan, Jonathan Rolling Tide.
And then you can go onto the website and find what that middle one is, but let's see, it rhymes with rock.
Thanks for the nice cover there. I appreciate that. So if we look at the overall standings, number 1 on top right now is Tyranny of Evil Men, and MG Movie Girls is hanging in there in 2nd. And there's a couple other folks that are close, but those two are kind of separate from everyone else. They've both reached the $1 billion mark for the season so far.
It's a lot of market share with those two. Congratulations. It's difficult to get to that mark.
Now, we have 3 weeks left, and there's talk in the chatter of if you want to make a big move in your week, you're going to have to start to take some risks to catch up to the people who are ahead of you. And we've got a really interesting week this week because of all the oddness of the calendar that we have this week.
Like, for the first time, I feel like, and really since, like, you know, the end of December with the big titles, we finally have some big popcorn movies to choose from, and there's like a ton of different strategies and options you can go with.
Now, before we do that, I had a chance to catch up with M37 this week as our interview subject, and he had some interesting things to say about his regular posts, and he debuted a new regular post this week that actually talks about the weirdness of the calendar. So let's listen to that here for a sec. So today I'm joined by what I'm going to call the artist formerly known as Multiplex 37, most active person on the chatter probably between him and Angry Geek is our own M37 joining us on the podcast today. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
It's going well. So I have to ask you first about the evolution of the screen name. So originally it was Multiplex 37 and people would always ask, well, what happened to the other 36 multiplexes? And then you kind of shortened it. And so what's the evolution there?
Well, when I first signed up, I was thinking of naming it like an actual movie theater. You know, you get famous ones like there's the AMC Empire 25, or there in your neck of the woods, there's like the Arclight 14. That was kind of the genesis of the name. So when I first named it, the multiplex part comes from a webcomic I used to read that revolves around a fictitious theater called the Multiplex 10.
Okay.
And then the 37 part was a reference to the movie Clerks, which this being a family-friendly podcast, I think I'll leave for someone to research on their own. And then from there, as more players joined and I kind of saw what their names were, I kind of realized mine was pretty boring. So I've now shortened it to the M37 moniker and just had a random movie quote or theme of the week in there to kind of keep it interesting.
Well, and I have to admit, I stole / copied that for a while before the last couple of weeks. I found it was hard to come up with something to, you know, some tagline every week. So I'm impressed that you managed to do that every week.
I keep trying. Usually it's movie quotes, which, you know, I'll just pick my favorite reference of the week and kind of go with that. So.
Okay. Now, how did you find out about Fantasy Movie League to begin with?
I've been playing fantasy football for over about 20 years now. So, of course, I follow Matthew Berry on Twitter, listen to his podcast, and then he, of course, promoted advertising the site. I've been in since about week one, I believe.
Yeah, all roads lead back to Matthew Berry, inevitably. Supreme leader Matthew Berry.
That would be true.
So what newer players might not know, and I know you don't like to brag, but I'll pump you up here a little bit, that after the first two seasons, after the summer and the fall, you had the highest cumulative score of anyone out of those 2 weeks. Now, this season, things haven't gone quite as well. And do you think that's because of how just odd the award season has been? Are you trying different things and some things have worked and some haven't? Or what's been your experience so far here in the award season?
Award season has been hard. I wouldn't say that I'm trying anything different. I've had a couple of close calls. I think I've had the second place best performer finisher in my lineup maybe 5 times this season. Of course, missed out on Daddy's Home, which hurt. But it's been a harder season in general, I think.
Well, and we just had Super Bowl weekend, and we've got a 3-day weekend coming up, and then sort of one, quote, normal weekend before Oscars weekend. So then just more bizarre stuff to the calendar.
I don't know if we've had a normal weekend this season since the week after Krampus. Everything's been either holiday or post-holiday, or we had the storm. Now, the Super Bowl, there's been a correction of some sort in every week, which is making projections really difficult.
It has. Now, let me ask you about your prowess on the chatter here. So you've regularly been writing a price check post, and you announced last week that you wouldn't be doing that anymore. So you care to explain why you got into doing that, why you're getting out, and what you might be doing instead?
Well, I first started just kind of randomly on my own. It was the process I was basically using in my own head in order to evaluate the film, setting a certain level that I said, okay, this is where the best performer will end up. What does each film need in order to get to that level?
So you would set some arbitrary, you would set some semi-arbitrary number, like 65,000 per fantasy buck.
Yeah, right? I usually do my own projections on Mondays before the pricing comes out. So once the pricing was announced, I get an idea of where the pricers expected the bonus level to end up. I get an idea, okay, well, they're saying this movie has to drop 40% in order to meet that level.
Sure.
I think it's going to drop 45, so it's probably not going to be my best performer of the week. And then from there, the price check post just kind of grew. I kind of thought about stopping it a while back, and I kind of got talked out of it. I do still plan to do a weekly post. The only difference will be I'm going to focus more on the general trends of the movies, holidays, things like that, and not specifically about individual films.
Okay. So do you mean you'll be looking at, say, the weekend itself, like coming up here, comparing to other President's Day weekends, that sort of thing, or?
Yeah, so like, so this upcoming weekend is going to be a fun one because we have post Super Bowl, we have Valentine's Day, and then we have the 4-day holiday weekend all rolled into one. So I'll do a post that'll relate to those three specific topics, but I won't touch on the individual movies.
I see.
The other thing I've noticed is that the chatter itself has kind of come alive the last couple of months, and there'll be threads started, you know, Monday nights for the four new films and other things that may be best performer candidates, and it kind of seemed what I was doing when the individual focus was sort of getting lost in the other threads. So we'll let those other threads, you know, kind of grow naturally, and I'll chime in there if I have something to add as well.
Well, I haven't posted anything on it, but you and I have become friendly over email. I think you know that I've been trying to run, not quite roll my own analysis, but trying to look at some alternatives. And among the things I've looked at and haven't gotten very far with is exactly what you're talking about. How do you compare, like, what's the total market size of this next weekend, and how does that compare to other weekends? Most of the time, the pros, what they do is they try to find comps. They find comparables. It's almost like the housing market, right? How much your house is worth is very much dependent upon what the guy down the street sold his or her house for. But
yeah.
But another way to think of it is, okay, here's all the money that's going to be spent this weekend. What percentage of that is going to go to each film is another way that you could think about that. So it sounds like you're headed in that direction. Is that accurate?
A little bit, yeah. I'm as you've noticed from reading any of my posts, I'm a big fan of Box Office Mojo. And I tend to lean towards historical data and comparison.
Sure.
So, for example, I mentioned the week of Martin Luther King weekend that the family films would probably see a really nice bump because of that extra Monday. And that panned out to be true. Now, it turned out that the one I picked didn't work out for Best Performer, but at the same, the theory behind it was still accurate.
So the concept was right. The specific implementation of it ended up being wrong.
Yep, another tough week on award season for me.
Okay. You know, the same thing for Christmas weekend. I remember thinking the same thing where I thought a family movie would do well for Christmas weekend, but I thought it was going to be Alvin, and instead it ended up being Daddy's Home somehow got pitched as a family film, and that ended up doing much, much better than anticipated. So I see where you're going, where you're looking for larger trends, and then how do you apply a specific movie to that trend?
Yes, that's kind of more the theme I'm aiming for.
Okay. Well, so that you and I don't nerd out on sort of more advanced topics, let me get back to asking you, if you had, say, one or two pieces of advice to give a new player, what would those be?
The first one, and this is kind of a common rookie mistake, and I understand when you first join the game, is that you are not actually showing movies at a movie theater. You'll see players who will have, you know, one of seven or eight different films in their cinema.
Sure.
And while that might be what your local Aplex is showing, that's not going to get you too far in the game itself. Once you get past that hurdle, the other kind of more of a rookie mistake or a beginner player's mistake that I see is that you should always have a goal in mind with the lineup that you're playing. I will always recommend the compare tool. That is an absolute godsend for all the players. But if you use that and kind of see, these are where my projections are, this is the lineup I'm going to play because either I think it's going to be the perfect cinema, or I'm not sure how things are going to fall, and I like the lineup as being solid. It has two best performer candidates in there, no matter what, I'm going to do well. But at least you should know going into the weekend that this is the goal of your lineup and not just playing movies you think are going to well without having a little bit more of a math behind it.
So don't play eight different movies.
No.
And have a goal with what you think is going to happen with best performer, whether that's going all in on one best performer or whether that's hedging between two or three, but having some multiple screens towards some of those films you think will get you that bonus.
Yeah, so if it's a week where you're not sure what's going to happen and you want to hedge, that's fine. I've done that quite a few times myself. Just understand that it is a hedge, I guess the best way to put it.
Sure. This has been especially difficult in the award season, but even overall, finding a perfect cinema is not an easy thing.
No, it's really not. I've only had, I think, four or five in my entire history of FML. It's only a couple.
But finding best performer, that's a little easier.
Yes, definitely. And then we only had our first time in history last week where you had the best performerless perfect cinema. So as long as you find the best performer, you're usually going to be in a good spot. regardless of how the rest of the films fall.
Sure. Now, let me ask you this question I've been asking all the interview subjects, which is, if there was one thing that you would change about Fantasy Movie League, whether that's the scoring or both just plain awesome, and Mara talked about the forums, there's a nice thread going on that FML Quality Assurance has launched about a mobile app. What would you change about what we're doing here at Fantasy Movie League so far?
Well, I'll definitely echo what Mara and Just Plain Awesome said about the chatter setup. It has gotten a little bit cluttered recently, and I know they're going to work on that somewhat. The game itself is pretty healthy, and the FML staff has been pretty receptive to suggestions from the players. The one thing I would mention as well, which they actually just noted in the chatter yesterday, is being able to add customizable leagues.
Right.
We've all gotten pretty good into the game as far as the standard setting, but being able to have a league with your friends where you have maybe a smaller Cineplex, only 6 screens, have a limit on how many you can play, change the bonus structure. This way allows players to play with their friends and under different sort of rules.
Now, how would you balance that with having the overall public league that would need one set of rules? So would you make it that if you have one login and you have you play different plays per league? Or how would you correct that part of it?
Yeah, it would be similar to, I guess, like a fantasy football setup where you'd have one account, but you could have multiple lineups in different leagues.
Okay.
In the same way, you may be in a standard scoring league and one here, but you might be in a points per perception, a PPR league, and over here as well, all under the same account, but with different lineups and screens filled in there.
Well, see, you say that, and I immediately start thinking about what's the software engineering you would have to do behind that. And while not impossible, because obviously the fantasy football leagues do it, yeah, that starts to make the coding a lot more complicated. I'm sure we'll get there eventually, but as you can imagine, the development team has different priorities that they're setting, and you can't do everything at once. So yeah, I like that idea too, but I would stress with everyone, they're definitely listening. Just be patient with what your suggestions are, and I think eventually this will mature to a point where it's more like what I think everybody wants it to be. This feels very much like, you and I have mentioned this in emails before, this feels very much like the early days of fantasy football, and the game's going to mature. It already has with the scoring system and the different bonuses and so forth. But yeah, I think there's definitely some coolness to what you're talking about there, to have different lineups per league.
Yeah, like I said the staff has been very receptive to suggestions. It may not be right away they get implemented, but even the bonus structure we have for the current season, I think, was a result of how the fall went, what they were a little bit too overloaded on the bonuses. So
right.
They're receptive to those suggestions, and they're working on it, and that's all we can ask for.
And are you happy with the current bonus structure? Because I kind of liked the bigger bonus structure, but I was in the minority there.
And this season, it's a little harder to say. I think we've settled into a nice spot. I think had the bonuses been higher, we would have seen even more fluctuation in the standings. But I think we're in a nice spot now. I think when we move into the next season, we have maybe a little more structure as far as the less holiday weekend, things like that. We'll kind of see how the bonuses play out.
Okay.
But I like where they're at for right now.
Well, that's going to be it. Thanks so much for your time, and I'm sure we'll have you on again at some point in the future. And otherwise, we'll see you in the chatter.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Patrick, his new post series, he's calling The Trend Zone, and this week he talks about the Super Bowl hangover, Valentine's Day, and President's Day all hitting on the same weekend, which there's not, I don't think, any precedent for that, given how the Super Bowl date has moved around quite a bit, that now it seems like it's almost in the middle of February, where it used to be like middle of January, you were done with pro football season.
I think he's right about that, and that's only going to go further and further. I've always wanted Super Bowl to fall on President's Day weekend, so you get like the Monday off. Who wants to go to the work the day after the Super Bowl? So someday I think we can get there. We just need to push it another week.
Well, I would highly recommend you take a look at that post that's out there on the chatter. He talks about the traditional Valentine's Day bump, talks about the President's Day bump. There's kind of no surprises there that romantic movies see a boost on Valentine's Day, and if you look at Monday, President's Day, that in the past has accounted for 13-14% of the total gross. So if you take like a normal three-day weekend, like a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is what scoring is usually based on, and you throw another 13-15% on that, that's kind of what you're looking at if you're looking for comparables for the different movies this week. It's a really interesting discussion. He always gets really deep into some of the stats I really appreciate all the time he puts into that kind of stuff.
He is probably the king of the chatter.
Indeed. So we've got a couple of new movies. Which one do you want to talk about?
Like, oh, yeah. If anybody didn't get that Clerks reference, I like highly recommend, you know, for all of our up-age viewers like out there, and like just check out Clerks, and then it'll become like, oh, yeah, I remember that. So check out the Clerks, and you'll get the reference.
Of-age viewers. I like that. That's going to come up here again when we talk
about... Or I should say listeners.
That's going to come up again here when we talk about Deadpool, I think.
Which, from what I've told of people who have seen it, totally earns its R rating.
Yeah, so let's talk about that one first. So the long-range forecast from ProBoxOffice.com is $80 million, and there's a really good thread out there talking about... There's the definitive Let's Debate thread, Deadpool thread that Sparty On started, but my favorite of the comments so far is the third comment that our own Phil's Fun Flicks made, where he talks about the different things to consider. So before we talk about the nerdy math and you hear my Deadpool rant, what are your thoughts about this movie here this weekend?
I mean, it's clearly going to be like number one, like by a mile. Like, I think it's going to do very well. Ever since, it feels like it was two Comic-Cons ago where they first premiered footage for it. I think the fanboys are very excited about it. Like you mentioned, the long-range forecast, like 80 seems a little ambitious for me. Like, I think probably the closest comparison would be Watchmen, which is another like comic book graphic novel that really earned its R rating. And I looked that up. Watchmen opened to about 55. And I think if you adjust that for inflation, that comes into like the mid to high 60s. Deadpool so far getting better reviews, so I think it's going to do a little bit better than that. I'm putting it more around 70. I'm being a little more conservative with my prediction.
Okay. Well, Phil actually...
But his very expensive this week. Again, paying like Star Wars or Jurassic World prices for it.
Phil had some interesting... had an interesting take on it. He first kind of talked about, is there enough money in the whole weekend to push to $100 million? So that kind of riffs off of M37's, you know, what's this weekend have in store for us just in terms of the total market value available? And is there enough for the top movie to take that $100 million? And in the first part of Phil's response, he talks about how there might be a market as big as $247 million out there. And given what the other competition is, maybe there's a shot, it could take a shot at like $100 million even, like the overall volume being there. But then he talks about the comp, like you just mentioned. So a lot of people are talking about the Watchmen as a comp. But Phil points out that that one isn't as connected, that wasn't as connected to a major brand as Deadpool is. And he talked about
just
comping.
Beloved graphic novel, but doesn't quite have the tie-in that Deadpool does.
Yeah, if you look at the source material for that, right, it was a much shorter run 80s DC comic as opposed to, you know, Deadpool's not exactly Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe, but has already been featured in one of the X-Men derivative films. So the next thing he talks about is there an R rating tax? And he points out that no R movie has ever opened above $100 million.
For sure, because again, the reason why so many of the, especially superhero movies, they want to get into PG-13 because you're cutting out like a huge chunk of your audience. I know I saw plenty of R movies at a very early age, well under 17, but doesn't work that way in everybody's household across the country. So yeah, there's definitely an R-rated tax. That's why studios always are going to push for PG-13. So it's very rare, and I think Watchmen was the last like R-rated superhero movie. So there's definitely a tax on them.
So this is where I find myself rooting against this film, like for the good of society. And I know I'm going to sound like a hardcore conservative when I say this. If you looked at
my sensing an FML nerd rant, here we go.
Yeah, here we go. So the thing about this, right, is the Watchmen, because it was like we just said, kind of a limited DC comic run. That one didn't have much of a following beforehand. Deadpool's got a little bit bigger of a following. And I get it how in the comics he's got a little bit more of an edge to him. And even those comics are a little edgier. But at the same time, like, you know there's going to be some 11-year-old boy that sneaks into this movie and is going to be exposed to the extra violence and is going to be exposed to the extra adult situations. And is that, like, the best thing? That's one of the, like, the Jeff Goldblum line from Jurassic Park. Yeah, you can do that, but should you do that?
It's ultimately, if you were to present this to any studio head or anybody with money in this, like, money clearly talks. So I get your point, but there's we know like 11-year-olds and plenty of people who are well underage are going to get to see this thing, and you never know.
Well, the other thing I think that's going on here is I think that some of the studios are starting to get a little bit desperate. And the reason I think that, if you look at the top grossing movies, right, our two top grossing movies this past year in 2015 were both Disney releases. If you think about what Disney has done here, right, so they spent the 90s and early 2000s building this huge marketing pipeline through acquisitions of different channels. So like when they go to market a movie, they can have Robert Downey Jr. show up 6 months in advance on Jimmy Kimmel and show an early trailer because they own that property. They can have three different Disney channels that target three different age groups and have very specific targeted messaging to each of those groups. They can have somebody be a guest on SportsCenter Los Angeles because they own that property. They can have somebody drop by halftime at Monday Night Football if the timing of that happens to work out. So they spent all this time in the 90s and early 2000s sort of building this group of properties that they could use as a marketing pipeline, and then they went and bought all these properties to fill it with, right? They bought the Muppets, they bought Pixar, they bought Marvel, bought Star Wars.
And the Lucasfilm one, arguably the biggest of them all.
Yeah, and they haven't tapped Indiana Jones yet. Now, Universal has done this to a similar effect, but they're the only ones that have anywhere near the same list of properties that Disney does to promote these things. So if you're Warner Brothers or if you're Fox, and if you not only don't have the properties to churn the marketing engine, but you also don't have the licenses to tick through it, I mean, I think part of this, I don't think it's an accident that it's Fox that's doing this, right? Because they have the X-Men that they have licensed based on the licensing agreement they made with Marvel before Marvel Studios started to produce its own films. And that's all they have. They can't acquire more. Disney's not going to give them more. So they kind of have to get as much use out of the characters that they have. And I think they had to do this because they're trying to take a chance. They're trying to push the edge with what they have at their disposal. I think that's why they're doing this R-rated superhero movie.
I mean, it's also the same reason like why you see like a new Spider-Man 5 years after the first trilogy. If Columbia or Sony doesn't keep making those Sony movies, the rights all go back to Marvel, which I think
exactly.
They kind of already have. They're going to have a partnership. So if Fox doesn't keep like using whatever characters they have and like trying to build a franchise out of it, those rights will eventually go back to Marvel. I think that's how we ended up with like, you know, another like lousy like Fantastic Four movie this past summer. But I mean, again, like you mentioned earlier, like Disney doesn't always have the best movies, but they've definitely historically they've had the best marketing, they've had the best distribution pipeline. And like franchises, they fuel the theme parks, they put merchandise in all the stores, and there's just synergy across the board. So franchises aren't going away anytime soon. So once you have one, you've got to milk it for all it's worth, and you got to try to find new ones. Like you'd mentioned Universal, they just announced that they're going to be – they already have dates for Fast and Furious 8, 9, and 10, and they've been doing a really ambitious trying to like release – like a huge slate of all their classic monster movies, your Wolfman, your Frankenstein. They just announced Johnny Depp's going to be starring in The Invisible Man for them. So Universal's trying like a different route, but franchises are gold. They're not going away.
But yeah, it's the same idea where you're taking a known property that you don't have to take the risk of creating an original story because you have some original characters built into it, and then just shove it through this marketing pipeline that you have.
But I'm guessing, so it sounds like you are not going to be seeing Deadpool this weekend.
No. Can you tell?
I get a little sense of that.
Just a little bit. Incidentally, you know who has the theme park rights to Avatar properties?
Let's say a Fox movie. I mean, I have no idea. I'm just going to guess Warner Brothers.
No, it's Disney. They're building an Avatar land at Disney's Animal Kingdom as we speak.
I knew they were building an Avatar land. I'm just trying to think who. I couldn't remember who was in conjunction with that.
Yep, it's Disney at Animal Kingdom.
And I actually, you know, I know you're a season pass owner. I happened to be at Disneyland this past weekend. I hadn't been in several years, and it's just amazing how much Star Wars has taken over the place. And they haven't even begun construction on Star Wars Land yet, but just all the shops, like Tomorrowland, like it's all like just Lucasfilm, like Star Wars synergy. So they're making the best of their investment there.
Did you happen to go on Space Mountain?
I did not get to Space Mountain this time. Like, the lines are way too long, but I heard they retrofitted it to kind of adapt it to a Star Wars theme. Now, like, the coaster, or like the little coasters you get into are supposed to be TIE fighters. At least that's what I read on the map. I wasn't sure. I didn't go on it this time.
Yeah, so they have a thing. They first started they most famously do this with Haunted Mansion, where they kind of do a facelift of the rides at. And they do this for Haunted Mansion between October and December every year, where they turn it into Nightmare Before Christmas. They do it at Christmas time with just Christmas decorations for Small World. And then, yeah, so for the season of Star Wars, I think is what they called it, they did a retrofit. They did a facelift of Space Mountain so that when you go through it, it's like you're in the middle of a TIE fighter battle and there's Star Destroyers.
And I honestly think every fifth T-shirt I saw somebody wearing in the park had a Star Wars theme. A lot of Chewbacca, very Chewbacca-heavy park on Saturday.
They'll never announce what the merchandising on that, but they have to have already made, just based on the merchandise and based on how the movie's doing, they have to have made back that whole $4 billion at this point, don't you think?
If they haven't, they're going to be very close, and by the time all these other spinoffs and sequels and God knows how many years of merchandising, it's going to pay off for them big time.
Well, and then when that gets exhausted, then they'll start to roll out Indiana Jones remakes. And
I hope that day doesn't come.
Yeah, I'm kind of with
you. I know it's coming. Like, I live in reality. I know there's going to be another Indiana Jones someday, but I'm in denial. I hope it doesn't happen.
Yeah, somebody besides Harrison Ford is going to play Indiana Jones at some point. And yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how
that goes. I'm not ready to live in a world where somebody else is playing Indiana Jones.
If you don't have that worry, you should go Google test footage of Tom Selleck as Indiana Jones, and that'll set you straight right there.
I know of the story, like, you know, some good lawyering there, not letting him out of Magnum PI to go do that movie. Like, that really worked out for everybody.
Yeah, it did indeed. So that's enough on Deadpool. It turns out there's two other movies that are out this week.
There are two, and also I think should be factors.
So which one do you want to talk about first?
Why don't we talk about Mr. Derek Zoolander, who's back after a 15-year hiatus.
Now, tell me, you said you just recently saw it in a summer setting, right?
I saw it over the summer, like at an outdoor screening. They do them here in LA. They're pretty cool. It's just like an outdoor, like, auditorium. They put a big inflatable screen up and they screen movies all summer. Like, one of the ones I went to, I hadn't been before. It just happened to be Zoolander and it was packed. Everybody knows every line. And again, it was not that successful upon like its initial release. It didn't do horribly. It didn't make a lot of money, but didn't lose much either. And it kind of had the misfortune of being really the first mainstream, especially the first comedy after 9/11. So nobody really saw it in the theater, but home video, cable over the years, it's gained a bit of a cult following. And that was clearly on display when I saw it outside. And I get a little bit of buzz about it, but I'm also seeing the first wave of reviews are coming up, and there seems to be like just a certain vitriol. Like, people are just like slamming it beyond belief. I mean, I wasn't expecting Zoolander to get great reviews from critics, but it seems like they're a little on the mean side, and they're like taking joy in the fact that the movie isn't very good, which makes me a little more cautious about it. I'm not as bullish as I was a few weeks ago.
Well, the log range forecast for it's $23 million. Are you buying or selling on that?
Oh, God. I'm a little leery because in terms of Fantasy Movie League, the movie we'll be talking about after Zoolander, like, that's the one that seems to be like the viable strategy for me this weekend. So 23, I think it's going to be right around there in the low 20s. I don't know if it's going to overperform. Like, if the movie's as bad as everybody's saying it is, it might end up a little bit lower than that.
Yeah, I don't have a good feeling about that one because of the sort of combination of all the things happening this weekend. I mean, it is, of the new films, the only one that's not rated R. But,
true.
But it's going to fall on Valentine's, and you don't think, man, is that Ben Stiller romantic? You don't think that, right?
I got to think that, you know, all the ladies who are going to be dragging their guys to the movies have a couple of other options this weekend before Zoolander, so I don't think that works in its favor.
And it's not exactly a kid target film either, so I'm not sure if the audience for this film necessarily fits the calendar on which it falls.
And again, I get a little bit of the sense of when Anchorman 2 came out, also got the terrible reviews, opened up a little bit bigger, ended up a little bit bigger, but that I think had like to do with 9 years of inflation. I think it's going to be similar with Zoolander, who's been away for even longer. I mean, 15 years is a long time to go between movies.
Now, how about the last film? We got How to Be Single, which has a long-range forecast of 20 million.
You see, this is the movie that I find myself, I think this is the lineup I'm going to go with this weekend. I think we're in a situation where obviously you can only, of the three strategies you can use for the new releases, you can go with one Deadpool, you can stack three Zoolanders, or four How to Be Singles. I'm kind of leaning towards that way because I was looking up the data. If you look at Thanksgiving the week or the week before, like over the last 10 to 12 years, 50 First Dates, 40 million. Hitch, 43 million. He's Just Not That Into You, 27.8. Valentine's Day, which legitimately one of the worst movies like you could possibly ever hope to see, 56.3 million. Just Go With It, 30.5. The Vow, 41.2. And last year, About Last Night, 25.6. So anything with a romantic angle, romantic comedy, like tends to do very well. I think How to Be Single can clear 20, and I think that's probably what I'm going to be leading my lineup this week.
What about the R rating tax?
I think it'll hurt it a little bit, so I don't think it's going to be quite as big as some of the movies I just mentioned, but like I believe About Last Night was R-rated and got to 25.6, so I think like the low to mid-20s for How to Be Single, very possible.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I'm going to wait.
I think it has the highest upside of between Zoolander and How to Be Single. I think it's got a much higher ceiling.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think it's, of the new films, it's the one you should most consider because Deadpool's priced too high and Zoolander.
Again, we all know Deadpool is going to clean house, but not like at that price. I just can't justify it.
Yeah, agreed. So if you're going to play one of the new films, this is the one to look at. And I, as you know, place a great deal of my model on what the professionals are going to say here later today. So I'm going to wait and see what that says. By the time people hear this, my article will likely be published, and we'll see how that plays out. I mean, like you said, it's kind of the new romantic comedy, but as somebody said in the forums, or I think it was in an email, Phil said to me that Rebel Wilson isn't Amy Schumer. So how does that all balance out?
That is true, but I'm just going back to like that list of movies that I just came up with. There are some terrible movies I just mentioned, like Valentine's Day. Like again, a couple of them had Adam Sandler and Will Smith. I just think on, especially when Valentine's Day falls like within the actual Friday to Monday period of President's Day weekend, I think there's going to be a lot of ladies dragging their guys to see How to Be Single, and like I could see lots of girls' nights out going to see this. So that's the one I feel best about.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap this week. So next week, the weekend of February 19th, we're going to have three new films in Risen, Race, and The Witch. And I'm going to have an attachment to Race because in fifth grade I did a biography report on Jesse Owens.
And do you still have that report somewhere?
I think my mom does, yeah. My mom throws away nothing.
Well, I think she needs to find it.
Okay, well, I'll challenge her with that. Although they are getting ready to move, so she might be throwing some stuff out. I make no guarantees.
How dare, like, what grade were you in?
Fifth.
How dare she throw out your fifth grade history project? That's just not acceptable.
Well, I am 45 years old, so.
Okay, maybe she has a point there.
All right. Okay, well, until next week. So this has been week 11 for Fantasy Movie League award season. You can find me on Twitter at NerdGuru. And Patrick, how about yourself?
You can find me, as always, at the Box Office Guy on Twitter.
If you don't want to have to win the drawing for a Fantasy Movie League t-shirt, you can buy one yourself at fantasymovieleagueshop.com. And you can find the league on social media at Twitter at FML_movies and on Facebook under Fantasy Movie League. Until next week. This has been the Fantasy Movie League podcast. Come join us and play for free in public leagues or against your friends at fantasymovieleague.com.